This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, how are we doing?
I'm good. Great to be with you on a Tuesday. Looking forward to the show. Two-a-days today features Florida State. Kurt Weiler from the Tallahassee Democrat will join us. Mark Ennis from ESPN Radio in Louisville. Friend of the show. Been with us before. Will be with us again. We'll talk about Scott Satterfield's third season. John Wildhack will be here, athletics director at Syracuse. A lot going on up there. Dave Doran, the NC State football coach, will be here. You'll get the syrup ready for that one. And at 9:15 this morning, Jim Cavalli, who is the CEO of INFLCR. It's called Influencer. It's a company that is working with schools, including Florida State, where he'll come to us today. Jim will join us at 9:15 to talk about kind of the systems of NIL, name, image, and likeness, because in the state of Florida, you may have heard, starts July 1. So, got to get your I's dotted and your T's crossed, Pack, when July 1 hits when it comes to name, image, and likeness. So, looking forward to talking to Jim Cavalli, whose influencer company has also done a ton of stuff with other ACC schools as well, Florida State just being one of them, and we'll visit with him today. So we got a great show, and we got more good news in baseball because Virginia slammed their way into the College World Series yesterday afternoon in Columbia, didn't they?
It was a grinder. They all seem to be with Virginia, right? I mean, there's just nothing easy about the Hoos. They kind of remind me a little bit of my beloved Giants. They call it torture. Out in the Bay Area with my Giants because nothing is easy. And that is exactly the deal with the boys from Charlottesville. Yeah. But you know what? They found a way to win yesterday. And it was a pitcher's duel. It was one of those just, again, it was a grinder of a game. It was old school. It was slow. It was get a guy in scoring position and somebody get a key hit. But it wasn't until the seventh inning until it was go time for the Hoos, who found themselves down 2-1. But now the most popular Teal in the Commonwealth, and it's not our guy, Teal. It's Kyle Teal, who the freshman goes yard a grand salami to put the Hoos up 5-2. And, man, it was dramatic, and it was crazy, and it was wild. And, bam, there it is on your screen. And you're like, oh, my goodness, it's out of here. Are you kidding me? Kyle Teal just crushes this thing. And next thing you know, as the camera finds it in center field, it's out of here. And Virginia takes the lead and they hold on. Compliments of great, great bullpen work. I mean, it was a terrific team effort. It really was. And, you know, when you start talking about what they accomplished, Wes, they've been in Columbia, it seems like, for a month. They've been in Columbia longer than the Gamecocks. Mm-hmm. That's how long Virginia's been there. But they lost
by
their
about 10 days.
It seems like it, right? I mean, so Virginia loses their first game in the regional. No problem. They come back and sweep everybody.
Right.
They lose the first game in the super regional. No problem. They come back and sweep DBU. And they join the likes of Rice and Florida State. There's only two other teams in the history of college baseball that have been able to pull off that stunt where you lose the first game of the regional, you lose the first game of the super regional, and you get to the College World Series. So congratulations to everybody in Charlottesville. It was a tremendous team win yesterday.
Well, a couple of years ago, you and I watched Florida State pull that trick, right? Remember sure that? Did. Watching that ball game together that night. It was amazing to watch Florida State stick-to-itiveness, and a lot of things have to happen. Well, yesterday for Virginia, it also – Teal obviously has the heroic shot. There's no question about that. But don't get over the fact that Wyatt came in and shut down Dallas Baptist. That was the key element yesterday. We probably all spent too much time wondering where Stephen Schock was. He's going to get his stage now in Omaha, of course. But Matt Wyatt was tremendous yesterday.
Sure was. He was great.
For the Cavaliers.
5 2/3 and said zero. You get nothing. And, man, I tell you what, Virginia needed it, too. And that catch right there by Chris Newell, which was on the top of the seventh inning, saved a run, obviously, in the home run. And then all of a sudden, bam, here comes your grand salami in the bottom of the inning. So great defense, timely hitting, the ultimate hit. And, hey, you know, you get to this stage of the deal when you get in the middle of June and you think you can get to Omaha. All of that has to play in. You got to catch the ball. You got to hit the ball. Yep. You got to play great defense, great pitching. And Virginia has had all of the above. They've been incredibly timely. And you know what? They don't panic. That's the thing that's been so impressive about Virginia. All these tight one-run games, you just kind of figure out a way, hey, at some point in time, we're going to get the hit and let's go. And that, you know what? 2015, the Hoos went on kind of a crazy run and won the whole thing. And Virginia joins now NC State from the ACC, and you will see them this weekend as it gets started on Saturday and on Sunday for the first round games in Omaha. So really, congratulations, Virginia. A great, great performance in Columbia.
Fifth time Brian O'Connor has taken a team in 18 campaigns at Charlottesville to Omaha for the College World Series. After the game, though, he was asked about Kyle Teal.
I'll tell you the characteristic: fearless. Kyle Teal is fearless. He isn't afraid. And to win games at this elite level of baseball, right, you not only have to have skill, you can't be afraid. Right? You will crumble at times when pressure's on if you're afraid. He's not afraid. Right? And he's got 100% belief in his ability, and he is going to let it rip every time he steps on the baseball field.
Wow.
And, you know, here's the thing, too, Wes. Virginia was threatening to tie the thing up. They had a man on third, one out. Teal was at the plate, and he didn't deliver. He struck out. In fact, the next guy even struck out. And you're thinking, you know what, it just kind of feels like a kind of a DBU day because they're playing great defense. Mm-hmm. They had the lead. Virginia had that opportunity, and you're wondering, all right, is it going to happen again? Well, you know what, the next time Teal had a bat in his hand, the bases were loaded in the bottom of the seventh after, like I said, after Newell's incredible catch in the top of the inning to save a run. And he goes yard. And, I mean, he crushed it. And it was a grand slam, and Virginia was off to the races. And, again, the pitching, the relief pitching in particular, was brilliant. And we didn't even see Steven Shock, as you pointed out, which was kind of surprising. But, hey, man, you go with a hot hand. If you got him shutting them down, go for it. I mean, just go for it. And Virginia did. And you mentioned the fifth time the Hoos make it back to Omaha. And for a team that started off 4-12 in league play, going nowhere fast, and you're kind of wondering, man, what happened to Virginia? High expectations, not off to a lousy start, kind of like NC State. Lo and behold, the two teams that got off to lousy, terrible starts in the league are still standing, and they're playing. NC State Saturday will take on Stanford, and Virginia on Sunday will take on Tennessee. So, again, great storylines on those two fronts. Really, really impressive.
Yeah, I think the thing that catches your eye about the two ACC schools ticketed for Omaha is that the stories are really compelling. The starts in conference play, the overall start, the rebound at midseason, the turning points. And then they both have guys and they both have head coaches who have clearly paid their dues and built their programs. The resiliency of both teams was on display this past weekend. I think that's all going to help when they get out there, but their storylines are really, really interesting. And I think that'll serve both NC State and Virginia well. The news pack, not so good for Notre Dame. Irish drew first blood last night in Starkville, America, led 1-0. And then in the second inning, the gates opened for the Bulldogs, including Logan Tanner's 3-run homer to make it 7-1. And quite frankly, from that point forward, it wasn't very close. 11-7 the final last night at Duty Noble.
Well, you'll concentrate on the second inning, which Notre Dame just simply could not get out of the inning. But I'm going to go to the first inning, Wes. This is the best fielding team in baseball, Notre Dame. You know what? They lost game one with four errors, and they blew a 7-3 lead. It's hard to give those away when you're on the road, and Mississippi State's a really good club in front of one of the best crowds that you're ever going to see in all of sport, much less baseball. So game one, you kind of kicked that thing around and what it could have, should have. You lost 9-8, but you blew a big lead. You had four errors. Last night, this is the game. This is a, you know, win or go home. You score in the top of the inning. Yep. Again, Mississippi State really hadn't gotten Notre Dame out the whole series. In the final of the first inning, another error, unearned run. You just got to catch the ball, throw. I mean, it was just like, Notre Dame, your one strength turned out to be kind of a bugaboo. So all of a sudden, whatever momentum you got in first inning, you got the lead, quiet the place down. Now, next thing, it's 1-1. But the second inning was a killer because it looked like you're going to get out of the inning down 3-1, stolen base, base hit. You know, it just, you just couldn't stop the bleeding. And by the time you got figured it out, it's 7-1. And, you know, that's an uphill climb for anybody, much less beating a really, really good Mississippi State team at the Dude. But, you know, Kyle Peterson told us yesterday on the show he thought Mississippi State was going to be able to score runs. And that was like, okay, if that's what it is, so be it. Notre Dame's not had an issue scoring. That was never an issue in any postseason game. They scored 50 in the regional. They didn't have any problem scoring runs. But the problem was catching the baseball and throwing a lot of errors, which was really uncharacteristic. A terrific year, though, for Link Jarrett. I mean, again, Notre Dame to me was one of the best stories this year in college baseball, given their consistency. But they lose the series, and I know they lost last night, but I still will go back to game one. To me, that was a critical spot because you had a chance to take all the momentum up 7-3. You got to be able to close the deal, and they didn't. You tip your hat to Mississippi State. They earned their third consecutive trip to Omaha. It's a tremendous program, great baseball fans. But for Notre Dame, a fun season, an interesting year. They blew up any expectations of what everybody thought because everybody thought Notre Dame would be any good. They were outstanding, fun team to watch the way they hit, but it came up a little bit short last night.
Well, and you got to put Notre Dame now in the list of programs. What Link Jarrett did in his first full season at 34-13, you kind of got to put Notre Dame on that mark now to, okay, next year, what do you think about the ACC and how the teams work and, you know, how do you fill out a card of, you know, first to last? You got to put Notre Dame on that list. I mean, even though Pittsburgh didn't make the tournament, you got to think about they're losing veteran players, both Pitt and Notre Dame, but you still got to believe that Jarrett's done such a good job in his first year. If they can fill those gaps packed with younger guys, then, you know, Notre Dame will be back in the hunt again for sure.
Well, again, preseason polls, you know how I feel about preseason polls, but, you know, when you automatically put teams in the North, oh, they got no shot to be a baseball factor because Notre Dame was picked last in the Atlantic. And I thought now looking back, no disrespect to NC State and Virginia who are still left standing, but Notre Dame had the most consistent baseball team this year in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that win you a trophy? No, it doesn't. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, you look back at their body of work, they made a lot of positive inroads this year under Link, who did a great job. So, again, I think the future is bright from that perspective, even though today's a little disappointing, because I think they will look back at that series and go, man, we just did not catch the baseball. They're the one thing that they were so good all season long was they don't beat themselves. And I thought they did in game one, and that came back to haunt them. Best of three on the road in that environment against a really good club. That's tough to overcome. It's tough. But a terrific year for Notre Dame. No. But the good news for the ACC, NC State and Virginia still alive and kicking. And like I said, everything gets started this weekend in Omaha.
Yeah, totally agree with you on that. Congratulations again to Virginia and NC State. Wolfpack, as Mark told you, play at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon against the 9-seed nationally Stanford, and then Virginia Sunday afternoon, 2 o'clock Eastern time on ESPN2 against number 3 Tennessee. Now, the Vols are flying under the radar here, but they have had, I say flying under the radar, with Arkansas losing, Tennessee is one of the best teams left in the field. So we'll see kind of the collision course, and the ACC gets two teams going to Omaha.
You know, at the end of the day, we got 8 teams still left. You got 3 from the SEC. You got 2 from the ACC, 2 from the Pac-12, 1 from the Big 12. Yep. Of the 8 teams that are in, 6 of the 8 are national seeded teams. Then they are seeded 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, and 9. 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 9. So this is a power-punched Omaha. You know, and every now and then you'll get somebody that doesn't fall into the Power 5 category. Not this year. So there's only 2 teams in the College World Series that were unseeded. They're both from the ACC, and they've both surprised NC State and Virginia. And say it all the time, doesn't really matter what that number is beside your name. You got to go play. So it's 2 and barbecue moving forward in beautiful Omaha, Nebraska, which is an incredible scene. And I had some folks yesterday call the radio show that are now hustling to make road trips to Omaha that have never been before. If you've never been, go do it because it is an incredible experience. Omaha. The city does an amazing job. Great food, venues fun. Mm-hmm. So get after it, man. Father's Day weekend, kick things off. It will be sensational in Nebraska.
Traveler's tip, fly to Kansas City, make the drive.
No.
How about that?
No.
It's not a great drive, but fly to Kansas City, make the drive. It's cheaper to fly to Kansas City than to Omaha, Pack, if you're doing it on short notice.
I disagree. Come on. I disagree with you, because here's the problem. You fly to Kansas City, you're going to eat barbecue. I'm just telling you. If you fly to Kansas City, you get in your rental car, you're not going to be in any fast-forward trip. Let's get to Omaha. You're going to hang out in KC and eat great barbecue. And next thing you know, it's like, oh, man, the tournament started 4 days ago. Ah, let's just stay here.
No, you're not. You're going to drive to Omaha.
Fly. Just get to Omaha. I mean, don't go to Kansas City unless you want to stay in Kansas City. Just telling you. Omaha's fine. Just fly to Omaha.
Airport in Kansas City is like in Topeka, by the way.
Yeah, I'm just telling
you. You know that. The airport in Kansas City is like 30 miles from Kansas City. It's closer to Omaha.
Just fly to Omaha. I'd be like saying, hey, go to Turks and Caicos. Spend a little time, then get to Omaha. It's a great trip, though, man. I'm telling you, I'm jealous of everybody that gets the assignment to go to Omaha.
It's a great spot.
It is a great spot. If you love baseball, it's heaven. If you're just lukewarm with baseball, but you love your team, you will have the best time of your life. It is that much fun. It's great.
We will effort to get the play-by-play voice of both the NC State and Virginia games, perhaps, on our show this week.
We should do that.
From Omaha. Maybe Friday. Maybe Friday morning we'll do that.
I'm all for it.
Get him on loan.
I'm all for it.
All right. When we come back, some of our staff has got, you know, every once in a while we put some stuff together. And every once in a while, the staff here, back row Hank and Matt, do an unbelievable job finding something. Well, they found something. The ACC Revenge Tour. Oh, it's alive and well. We'll talk about it next on Packer and Durham. Good morning on a Wednesday.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, it is a Tuesday. All day here on the network. God. A Tuesday. The reason I know it's a Tuesday because I go to the eye doctor at noon. That's why I know it's Tuesday.
And I said Wednesday going to break, so that's on me.
It's all right. Just want to make sure we got our days right. Because for a second there, I was like, oh, my God.
No, it's Tuesday.
All right. That's right.
Yeah, you missed your Tuesday appointment.
No, I did not. I know what's going on. All right. NC State, Virginia. Good to go. Punched the tickets. Yep. Lost the first game of the Supers. No problem. Yep. Life is good. Again, the ACC team's not playing it at home. Didn't have the advantage of playing at home like everybody else did. Had to take it on the road. Lost the first one. No problem. Boys punch tickets, and they're off to Omaha. And, again, congratulations to both. Really great stories. Both of them.
All right. Now, here's the thing we were talking about. Virginia and NC State also both lost the first game of the Super Regional, only to come back and win, right? Come back and win, advance into the College World Series. It continues the trend. Now, Matt Lieberman works on our staff. He's part of the back row. We talk about back row Hank, back row Matt, right?
Yep.
So Matt came up with the revenge tour idea. Whether it's a revenge within the same regional bracket, whether if it's revenge tour on a season, ACC teams that avenge losses on the biggest stage. So let's go chronologically here to start this process today, because it's already happened this year. It's happened twice already this year when you think about it. The most notable is Akacia Walker Weinstein's lacrosse team. Boston College lost both to Carolina and Syracuse in the regular season, turns around, beats them in the lacrosse Final Four pack to win the national title. I don't know how much better it gets than that right there.
Well, in this particular case, you knew it was going to go through North Carolina in some shape or way for me. You have to beat them. Somebody had to, and they did. And that set the stage for an amazing run. But you're right. As far as the ultimate revenge tour, especially something within your own league – you really take notice right. that, hey, you know what? They're really good. We're gonna see them again, and we better be ready to roll. And they did. And they took care of business and won their first yeah. women's lacrosse national championship.
All right. One of the other ones that happened this year was in women's basketball. Now, we had some quirky scheduling in women's basketball, you know, because we were kind of walking through the COVID trying to figure out, you know, safest way to make sure you got games in, things like that. So you had these weird kind of back-to-backs from time to time. Virginia Tech beat number two NC State in overtime 4 days after losing to them in Raleigh. They played a great game in Raleigh, and they turned around, and 4 days later, the game went to double overtime. Might have been, Pack, in my mind, one of the best ACC basketball games, period, of the year.
It was a thriller. And this was a Virginia Tech team that was getting better and better. Remember, they lost so many close games. And you're like, man, are they ever going to get over the hump? Well, this was the one. And at the time, you're thinking for NC State, because we all kept talking about NC State-Louisville. Can't wait for NC State-Louisville. Yeah. Can they get there yeah. unblemished with a 1-2 combination in the polls? And no, they could not. And why? Because, well, hokey, yeah. hokey, hokey high. That's why. So that revenge tour absolutely kicked in that week, no question.
Yeah. Now, we know that North Carolina won the field hockey national championship. They beat Michigan to win that in Chapel Hill. But Carolina also last fall had their regular season win streak snapped at 47 games when they lost at Louisville. Well, who did they end up beating in the ACC championship? Louisville, to avenge what ultimately was their only loss of the year. Karen Shelton's got a great program, 3 straight national titles. But you had a loss. How were you going to handle it? Well, you beat them in the ACC championship. By the way, they almost met a third time.
Well, like I said, it's kind of like the lacrosse story. You know, the league was so good with quality teams at the top that you took notice and you understood, all right, the balance of power goes through Team X. We're going to probably see them again. Mm-hmm. And for North Carolina, don't you know, chip on shoulder, Karen Shelton's girls are like, okay, we don't lose here very often. And when we do, it's noted. Right. And it was noted, and they corrected the problem.
All right. There was one in football of note, right? Clemson lost to Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. Saturday night, great game. No Trevor Lawrence. The Tigers avenged that in the ACC championship game. Much to the chagrin of Notre Dame fans, although the Irish still got in the CFP.
Yeah, the ACC put two teams in the college football playoff this year. That's the first time that's ever happened. But this was one of those things that when Clemson lost the game in South Bend, you tip your hat to the Irish because they played terrific and found a way to win. But Clemson knew that, hey, you know what? At full throttle, we'll see what we can do. And the second one was not close. And that was a woodshed for the title. And put the Tigers in. And, of course, Notre Dame, still with a quality body of work, got into the college football playoff as well. And, of course, that's the last time we saw the Irish in ACC football, probably for a while, unless they decide to join the conference.
Yeah. Virginia's men's lacrosse team in 2019 beat Duke in the Final Four after suffering a 12-7 loss in the regular season. And, of course, Virginia would then beat Yale for the national championship after just a tremendous semifinal.
Lars Tiffany and company got hot when it mattered, didn't it? I mean, it was just they had took a couple weeks off based on the scheduling standpoint. When Lars talked to us, he mentioned talking with Bronco about how do you handle the bowl situation when you have a couple weeks off. Everybody got healthy legs, and the rest is history. An absolutely legendary national championship game against Maryland. But, again, the Hoos, another national championship.
A couple more before we get here to the top of the bottom of the hour. And Kurt Weiler joins us from Tallahassee. In 2019, Duke avenged 2 regular season losses to North Carolina when they beat the Tar Heels in the semifinals of the ACC tournament in Charlotte. Zion Williamson, by the way, was sensational in his only ACC tournament appearance. The first loss against the Tar Heels was the world-famous Zion shoe game. And then, of course, Carolina won the regular season finale in Chapel Hill before Duke won the following Friday night in the ACC semifinals. The last one from a couple of years ago involves Lonnie Alameda, who joined us yesterday, and that's Florida State, who lost the first game of the series against LSU and UCLA, but came back to eliminate both before winning the national championship in Oklahoma City in 2018. We talked a little bit about this during their – there's Megan King striping it, by the way, Pac. We talked a little bit about this during the Women's College World Series. It's really become kind of become a defining characteristic of what Florida State will do. And that's an important part, I think, of what Lonnie's built for sure, don't you?
Well, when you win eight consecutive elimination games at that level against that quality of competition, you know exactly what you're made of. So, yeah, you're talking about revenge tour. That elimination tour was unbelievable. It's kind of like what we're seeing right now with Virginia baseball as far as elimination games with a zero in the loss column. They have been fantastic in that department. And sometimes teams just get the knack of figuring out ways to win. And to me, that is a testament of great coaching and just the guts and characteristics of a team that's mentally tough that is not going to go away. And I think we saw that with Florida State softball. We're seeing that right now with Virginia baseball and NC State for that
matter. And we saw it last weekend with certainly with both the Wolfpack and Cavaliers, and it's a characteristic that may serve them well in Omaha. All right, sit tight. When we come back, two-a-days with Packer and Durham on a Tuesday. Florida State is up next. Kurt Weiler covers the Noles for the Tallahassee Democrat. He'll join us. Mike Norvell. It cannot be as bizarre as it was last year for sure. We'll talk to Kurt next on Packer and Durham on ACCN.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham. It's a Tuesday. And two-a-days continue on the program because today we're going to talk a little Louisville football, and we're going to talk about Florida State.
Yeah.
The Noles. Important for both of them to have bounce-back years. And let's go down to beautiful Tallahassee because Kurt Weiler is going to join us again. He's been with us before, and he has been roaming the globe checking out the Noles, whether it be softball, baseball, or anything else, and needs a breather, but he's going to be put to the test. First of all, Kurt, great having you back on the show. It's been a busy offseason in Tallahassee for multiple sports, not to mention name, image, and likeness, transfer portal, all that other stuff that's going on. But we got football on the brain a little bit here, and this is going to be a really interesting deal for Mike Norvell. The transfer portal has been a very, very active spot for this football program, and even at the quarterback spot has people already talking even before we get to media days, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I mean, Mike Norvell's kind of talked candidly about, I don't want to always hit the transfer portal as hard as I did kind of in my first full offseason here. But he knew he had to because he kind of saw the state of the roster, and he saw by the end of last year, I think they were the youngest team in college football just in terms of percentage of freshmen and sophomores. So they really needed that infusion of experience that they got from so many guys, be it, like you mentioned, Mackenzie Milton from UCF, be it Jermaine Johnson on the defensive line, be it three guys they added in the secondary, Dylan Gibbons from Notre Dame on the offensive line. Mike Norvell very much, I think he's excited with a lot of the guys he brought in that freshman class. He's talked highly of them, but I'm not sure a ton of them are those early impact guys. So he's kind of countered that by going to the portal, like you said, and hitting it real hard.
All right, but Kurt, here's the bigger picture. Three straight years under 500. At some point, something's going to give here, right? The distractions and all the things of a year ago are understandable. I know it doesn't fit to the kind of the dialogue that Florida State fans want, but the reality of it was, I'm not sure anybody had a chance last year if they were a first-year coach outside of Jeff Hafley. And Jeff Hafley made it look too easy in some respects. But what happens now with Florida State? How much of this person-to-person experience has helped them through the spring? We saw some things in the spring game, but in reality, what do you expect once the fall gets rolling here?
I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, you have to see some kind of improvement. I think you will see improvement in terms of on-field product. I think it will make something of a difference in terms of record, but it's fair to ask how much, mainly because of, I mean, the schedule they face. I mean, if you're going to want to play Notre Dame this year, opening against them, especially opening at home, is great. But that's still a tough opening game. You got a trip to Clemson. You've got a trip to North Carolina, a trip to Florida. I mean, I think this team could be noticeably better on the field, and it may not still kind of bring the record that fans are used to seeing. But that being said, I mean, even against, like, I mean, I think I would hope that fans are able to see this record, the schedule, and kind of see that even if it's only six, maybe seven in a great situation, eight wins, that's still notable improvement from last year's record against last year's schedule.
Kurt, there's a lot of questions about the football, but you brought up the fans. I want to go down that path a second. I mean, this is a program that, let's be honest, for the ACC, from a national perspective, Florida State needs to be good. You know, and if, and I'm not necessarily talking, let's get to being elite. Elite takes time. But the good news is Florida State's proven they can be elite. But where is the mindset of the fan base? Is it one of apathy? Is it one of excitement? If you put on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you put the number for Florida State's fan base heading into 21?
It's tough. I mean, I would say probably in the – if we're talking expectations range, probably higher than it should be. It's tough. They've been frustrated, and they've kind of bought in time and time again. I mean, the end of Jimbo happened and the start of Willie, and they saw kind of so much good PR, good buzz that first offseason under Taggart, and then they saw the Virginia Tech game that kind of started where they lost 24-3 in his first game at home to Virginia Tech, and it was not any of the lethal simplicity, any of the war daddies and all that Willie Taggart promised. And then I think fans kind of bought in again entering year two of Taggart because, oh, he's got Kendall Briles now. Oh, that's great. And it, again, didn't really show to kind of the expectations. And then you go to year one of Mike Norvell, and I think fans, especially once the pandemic happened, kind of understood. I saw a lot of last year looking at kind of the small victories and seeing that. I think, still, obviously, 3-6 is not nearly to Florida State standard. And I mean, there were some fans, I'm sure, who were frustrated by that, who, despite all that, kind of expected a quick fix, which it's become clear. I don't think anyone outside of maybe Nick Saban could have kind of made this a quick fix. Mike Norvell's helped himself this offseason as recruiting's opened back up this month. They've been hard on that. They're very well positioned with that 2022 class. It's still the best in the ACC. Obviously, if the results aren't all the way there, if the ceiling is seven or eight wins, that probably won't end up being the best class in the ACC, but he has definitely helped himself in that regard. And I think if he's able to, despite maybe not a season of Florida State standard, keep that class together, I think that paired with some difference, even if it's doubling wins to six, would make a big difference for the fans. Because, I mean, I think they know they've got to give him time at this point.
All right, Kurt, I know this is an unfair question. I'm going to preface all that by saying that, who's the most important player on Florida State's roster today?
It's putting a lot on a guy who's new, but he's not new to the stage. I would say it's Jermaine Johnson, the Georgia defensive end transfer. And that defensive line had minimal consistent pass rush last year. And what we saw from Johnson, I mean, the hype we heard coming in and we heard from the coaches leading up to spring was, this guy looks like the real deal. And thankfully, we were able to watch a number of full spring practices. And I think we kind of saw he is the real deal. Or at least he sure seemed like it during the spring and in the spring game before he, I think, went down with a minor injury and had to miss the rest of it. Well, I mean, they haven't had that pass rush threat since Brian Burns in 2018. And before that, they'd really had a run of them. They had DeMarcus Walker before that, a number of other guys. That was something they'd kind of always had. And this defense, I mean, people have gotten on to kind of the secondary and their coverage ability or inability struggles at time. But if there's no pass rush, there's only so much those guys can do. They can only cover for so long. And so if Jermaine is able to kind of be that guy, and I think that opens things up for the rest of the defensive line too, the attention he commands, I think that will do wonders for the rest of the team.
You know, for years and years, we've talked about Florida State's offensive line woes. And I really like Florida State's quarterback room. I think they got some dynamic playmakers there, but you got to keep them upright and you got to give them the ability to throw the ball downfield or open up holes, obviously, for the running backs and so forth. So offensive line wise, where are we in Tallahassee heading into 21?
I mean, they bring back everyone from last year's unit, and last year's unit was by no means great, but there was, I would say, noticeable improvement, especially in run blocking. I mean, what they were able to do for Florida State's running backs, and Florida State's got a strong, solid running back group. I'm not going to say a great running back group, but I think they've got a number of guys they can rely on, and you saw them kind of be able to realize that, unlike Cam Akers kind of never did. So, I mean, getting a guy like Devontae Love Taylor, the FIU transfer who was new last year, to come back and use that extra year of eligibility was huge. Same for Bavion Johnson. They've got a number of young guys they're pretty high on. It's about how much of a step they can take and how much they'll benefit from a full off season. And it's also about, I would say, building that depth, getting kind of 8-9 guys they can rely on, because you need that. I mean, on the offensive line over the course of a year, you're going to have injuries. So I they're building up that depth. I think they feel good about 5 or 6, and it's about maybe building the depth beyond that.
Hey, Kurt, you can get your dog on television now. Listen, I'm surrounded by Chester and Fuller, and so their ears perked up with your pup going crazy in the background. So don't feel like you got to give the Heisman pose to your pup. Dogs are welcomed on the show.
Somewhere else. I'll see if I can get him up here. Come on.
Hey, Kurt, we talk about offensive line, pass rush, secondary. Why do I want to come back to Amari Gaynor on the defensive side? I just think that guy is a guy who's he's going to be a major factor in what this is, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a guy who really throughout his time, he was a part of that first Willie Taggart recruiting class, and a lot of that class, like a crazy percent of that class, is kind of gone, having not made much of an impact in the program, be it to the portal, be it buried in the depth chart, whatever. But he's a guy, I mean, he just seems to be a guy who puts himself around the ball. He is it's kind of a cliche term, but he is a playmaker who has a knack for finding the ball in the backfield, has a knack for just making the big play when they need it. And I mean, it's hard to overstate that. I'm right there with you. I mean, I think what they did, not only him, but what they did last year with DJ Lundy and Steven Dix Jr., they kind of relied pretty heavily on two true freshman linebackers. And those guys are now kind of redshirt freshmen and I think have benefited a lot from the roles that were asked of them. I mean, you need to see improvement there, and I think you will.
Kurt, you mentioned the schedule with so many tough road games. But I want to go to the opener because it is Notre Dame. These two saw each other last year. I'm going to be honest with you. Unlike some teams in the ACC where you kind of get a sense of, hey, teams coming off of tough years, you better win that first one because it could be iffy. I don't get the same sense with Florida State with this game because I think you catch Notre Dame at the perfect time. Notre Dame had so many fifth-year seniors. I mean, that was a really experienced football team in South Bend last year that expected to be good. And listen, Brian Kelly's recruited extremely well, and I expect Notre Dame still to be good. But I think catching them in the very first game at home, Sunday night, under the lights, the place will be stoked up, ready to go. I think you catch Notre Dame at actually the perfect. If I was going to play Notre Dame, I'd want to play them in week one this year.
Oh, you're absolutely right. If you have to play them with a new quarterback, with a largely new, I know they're replacing a lot of guys up front of the offensive line, a number of defensive playmakers, it's the time to get them, no doubt. I mean, whether that makes a difference in the result kind of remains to be seen. I would say I'm still skeptical of that. But no, I mean, it is a game that Florida State is absolutely capable of winning. And last year's game at Notre Dame, that really the same can't be said. I mean, they were more competitive in that game than I thought they would be. But yeah, it will be interesting. It will be, I mean, I worry that kind of people are going to see it as a disappointment with all that Notre Dame team is losing or replacing if Florida State doesn't win. And I would say that's probably unfair. But I think, I mean, it is there for Mike Norvell to kind of start year two with a huge splash.
You know, Kurt, it's interesting, and you've seen Florida State evolve here one way or another with this. And we've kind of tied a lot of things together here. And we've glossed over the McKenzie Milton thing. And I'm going to ask you the same question I kind of posed to Stephen Bailey yesterday. And it was in relationship to Tommy DeVito at Syracuse because of all it was Schrader transferring in, that kind of thing. Would Tommy DeVito be the opening day starter? Is McKenzie Milton going to win this job? I mean, is it a fait accompli that when we get to Charlotte in, what, 3 weeks back, Mike Norvell steps up to the podium and says, hey, McKenzie Milton's going to be our starter, or are we potentially looking at somebody else in an August battle?
So it's interesting. I mean, coming into the offseason, I would say that his odds, I still think I would say I would bet on him. I would say he's the betting favorite. But I would say the odds of it are less than I would have thought coming into the offseason. I mean, you're showing the spring game highlights now. Mackenzie Milton looked great in the Florida State spring game. I think there's something to be said for guys who kind of shine when the lights are on, when there are fans in the stands. But through the course of spring, from what we saw, Jordan Travis was, I would say, the most consistent passer among them. Right. I think Mackenzie looked like a guy who was at times learning the offense, dealing with some of that. And that's to be expected for a guy who only got here in January. But Jordan has shown notable growth as a passer, which is, I don't know if it's something everybody thought. And I mean, obviously, his rushing ability speaks for itself. So I think it'll go down to it between those two. I think those are the two. Chubba Purdy may have factored into it, but he, I know, dealt with some re-aggravation stuff that had to have another procedure for his shoulder he hurt last year. So I think it's really between Jordan and McKenzie, but no, I do not think that it's a clear-cut thing by any means.
Hey, Kurt, you know what? Here's what I think Mike Norvell is going to tell you and everybody else in Charlotte next month. He's going to pull the Pac-Man plan and go, we really feel good about our quarterback room. We have complete confidence in all of our quarterbacks, and we feel that we can win with all of them. That's what I think Mike Norvell is going to tell all of us next month.
He said he's the script already.
Yeah, I think when he says it, and when he says that next month, I'm going to be in the back of the room going like this. Great answer. I tell these guys in the media nothing. I tell them absolutely, positively squat when it comes to my quarterback. Zero.
Kurt, I'm going to tell you something. You better get ready for this show in the month of August because I'm just going to say this. Packers hoping he takes it all the way to kick against Notre Dame, don't you, Pack? You don't want him to say a word on Thursday. You don't care about Twitter, right?
No, I don't care about any of that nonsense. If I'm the coach, if I'm Mike Norvell, and you're still asking me questions in August about the quarterback, here's when you find out. Sunday night, 10 seconds before we come off the side, guess what? You're going to find out who runs out in the huddle. That's when you're going to find out who my starting quarterback is. That's what I'd tell all of them.
I wouldn't be surprised if it's game week. Yeah, I mean, that was the Jimbo special was game week. If he Monday or Tuesday, game week. I wouldn't be surprised if it's that.
Exactly right.
Well, game week, Packer wants it to be game time.
Yeah. Heads or tails.
Sunday night.
It's going to be like this. Heads or tails. They're going to be out there midfield. They're going to be like, man, who's starting for us tonight? I don't know. You'll find out here in a second.
All right, Kurt, you're the man. Thanks for the time as always. Look forward to seeing you in Charlotte. Catch up on some rest. That Oxford to Oak City is that can be a little bit of a tough route if you're not careful. So be well. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me, guys.
You got it.
All right, you bet. Don't forget, we will be in Uptown Charlotte as Mark Packer hosts the ACC football kickoff on July 21st and 22nd. We start with the Coastal on Wednesday, the 21st. We wrap the Atlantic on Thursday, the 22nd. Wall to wall, you don't want to miss a minute of our full coverage from Charlotte. One of the greatest seasons in ACC football begins right here on ACC Network and streaming live on the ESPN app. When we come back, it's Tuesday. And that means, Mark, that we play True or False, presented by
Dish.
Next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Packer and Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Tuesday, 844-SAY-ACC, and the number for the program. Many thanks to Kurt Weiler who just joined us.
Cheers.
Talking a little Florida State football. It is now time on a Tuesday to do a little True or False. It is presented by Dish. And with that said, we Dish. Head up to Bristol, home True. Of the smart people, where Josh Macri, the voice of victory, joins us. What's happening?
Good morning, gentlemen.
What's up?
A good Tuesday for you?
So far, so good.
Looking forward to a good Wednesday.
Well, better than Wednesday. I was trying to get us ahead in the week. That's all. And then Pac remembered his eye appointment, so he knew it was Tuesday.
You can try as hard as you want, but it's Tuesday. True. Yep. It's Wednesday. True. False.
False.
Yeah, which brings us to today's edition of True or False.
True.
NC right. State's Jose True. Torres was one of the heroes for the Wolfpack in the Super Regionals. True. True. He hit he hit a home run in three consecutive games for the Pack. True. True. But true or false, True. He'll hit at least two home runs in the College Ooh. World Series.
False. False.
It's a big ballpark,
that
Pack.
Is a large,
it's a big ballpark.
Large yard.
It's a large, yeah, large.
Yeah, I think that if you are counting on we're just going to blast away, this is not the place to
nope.
try it because Omaha is a very, very humongous place. And so small ball normally works. I'm going to go false, even though Jose is in fuego, smoking hot. But I'm going to go false on that.
All right.
I hope I'm wrong.
I, too, will go false here, Josh. First thing I thought of was it is a really big – and Kyle Peterson, I thought, made that comment yesterday. You know, pitching is going to be a big, big piece of whoever wins this thing, and it has been since they moved downtown. Rosenblatt Stadium, half wedge, get it out. Not TD Ameritrade. TD Ameritrade is a big, big ballpark.
Yeah, it's big and the wind blows in. It's a double whammy. And you're always going to have those late afternoon thunderstorms there. It's like Columbia, South Carolina.
Yep.
So the wind's blowing. It takes a pretty good poke to knock it out of that joint. There's no question.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right.
But it is true that chicks dig the long ball.
That is true.
That is true. let's go to the ACC's other College World Series participant, Virginia.
True.
They've outscored their opponents by 52 runs in innings 7 through Ooh. 9 this season. True. But
Whoa.
True or false, UVA will outscore Stanford in the final 3 frames throughout the course of their College World Series matchup.
That is totally false because they're not playing Stanford. That is false. Now, could they do it against Tennessee?
Against Tennessee.
That could be true.
Yes,
but Stanford, I'm going to go
Tennessee,
false.
Yes, not
false,
Stanford.
False. Now, you could have a dish question like this for next week if we get to the fact that it's Virginia and Stanford for the national championship. Then this question could be pertinent. But I'm going to go false for this week. False.
I caught you there, Pack. Good job. You're paying attention. True.
True.
It's not Wednesday on Packers World.
No. Nope.
I, too, am going to say false, Josh.
Yeah. Everyone should say false there. Oh, well. college football expansion. They're going to the vote later this week. True. But true or false, a non-conference champion will win the national championship within 3 years of that proposed 12-team format taking effect.
So one of the teams that has to play 4 games is what you're saying.
Correct. True. Presented by Dish.
False. False.
I'm going to say true. I'm going to say true. You know why, Mark? And I was thinking about this a little bit over the weekend. I was talking with some buddies of mine. Think of the one-loss teams, like who could lose in a conference championship, still get in, and be good enough to win the thing.
I don't think they make it,
they get in as an at-large.
I don't think there's many of them. That's why I'm going to go false. You know what? Here's why.
Okay.
Here's why I'm going to say that's false. Because I think Ohio State's going to dominate the Big Ten till proven otherwise. I think Alabama is still the class of the SEC. Sorry, Georgia, you still haven't won anything in 40 years. Clemson's still the team to beat in the ACC. Oklahoma is still the team to beat
right.
in the Big 12. Those 4 teams, in my opinion, the snapshots the next 3 years, hey, you know what? I'll take my chance. You give me Ohio State, Alabama, Oklahoma, Clemson, I'll give you the field in the respective leagues. I bet I got more titles than you do in the next 3 years. I'll take that gamble.
Yeah. Okay.
I just think they're the 4 best
All
teams.
Right.
Doesn't mean that Georgia couldn't or somebody could get Texas is finally back. Whatever. Or Penn State, you know, James Franklin decides to coach and Penn State becomes, you know, a fact. Could all that happen? Maybe. But you know what? I trust Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma. I do.
All right.
So I'm going to go false.
All right. I will say true, Josh.
I like
I'm
it.
I'm going to go true.
I like you going out on a limb there. Last one.
Thanks.
Last true. One for now. True. So we had our two-a-days with Florida State earlier with Kurt Weiler. We have our Louisville two-a-days coming up later in the show at 8:15. True. Malik Cunningham was second on the Cardinals in rushing attempts last season with 131. True or false, he will lead the Cards in rushing attempts in 2021.
False. Better not.
Yeah,
he better
I think that's the way to answer that question. He better not. Could he? Yes. Should he? No. So I'm going to agree with you.
No.
False.
Right. Thanks. Good stuff, Macri. Well done. I like how you tried to play that sneaky Virginia Stanford thing, too. That was sneaky. Try to get a little sneaky with us, see if we were awake on Tuesday.
No. You're
well
not,
done. True or false?
Not sneaking the fastball past us this early on a Tuesday. Listen, I've been up since 2:30 in the morning, so it feels like it's noon already.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah, you're not getting that one past us. So, but thanks to the good folks right. at Dish. True or false? Every week.
That's it. We come back top of the hour. ACC sending two to Omaha. Yeah, boy. Pack's going. Wahoos are going. Steven Shock, Elliot Avent. They'll make press conferences fun. Sit tight. More to come. Packer and Durham on a Tuesday on ACC Network.
This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.